I am Jamal Lee. I am currently 24 years old. Today is April the 27th, 2012. Our location is Atlanta. And my relationship to my partner is, she is my coworker.
My name is Nicole Shepherd. I am 30 years old. Today's date is April 27th, 2012. We are located in Atlanta, and my relationship to my partner is we are coworkers.
All right, Nicole, where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? I was actually born in the Bronx, New York, in Albert Einstein Hospital. Okay. I moved from there to the Poconos, which is the northeastern region of Pennsylvania, a lot of mountains, a lot of trees, no bus system, no trains, no sidewalks, but it's probably the most beautiful state to me.
Okay.
Where did you grow up, Jamal?
I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I happen to be one of the only people that I know of in Atlanta that has, both of my parents are from Atlanta and my grandparents are from Atlanta on both sides. And so we have three generations of native Atlantans. I was born in Grady Hospital. I was raised in Carver Home Projects. And that is one of the proudest things that I have. I love where I'm from. Nicole, who were your favorite relatives growing up?
My favorite relatives? That's a good question because I am not too close with either side of my family. But I would say maybe the most influential relative in my family is probably my grandmother. She passed away when I was 11, but she is someone who just really modeled to me what a woman is supposed to be like, what a godly woman is supposed to be like. She was like as my cousins would call her, she was like Big Mama. To me, she's grandma, but she was that person who, you know, cousins would stay at the house, or whenever we had a big holiday, everyone would gather at her house. She lived most of her life in Harlem, New York, which is where my father and his siblings are from. And she was someone who cared deeply for people. Though she lived in the projects, it was like she walked around like she had no fear. There was a lot of respect for her in the community. She ran a soup kitchen, and she was really active in, I remember, her senior citizens center. She traveled as a missionary. She really loved people. She loved God. She loved people. And that was my first model of that. And she really impacted my life, even though it's several years later. That was probably the most influential family member. How about yourself?
Well, it's everyone in my immediate family. It's just my mother, my father, and my brother. They're the three closest people to me. But outside of those three were my grandmother and grandfather, who I actually, when I was born, we were living with them. And so they were always like my second parents. And whenever my parents were young, my father was 20, my mother was 24. And so they worked around the clock when my brother and I was younger. And we were always at my grandparents' house. Even when we moved out, it was like nothing transitioned. And so all of our friends were always stationed wherever my grandparents lived, which was Carver Homes, which I mentioned earlier, which is why that's such a home stay for me, because that symbolizes the time that I spent with them. Mm-hmm. And it was like the arc of my childhood is the highlight. And it's kind of like after my grandparents died, everything changed. I don't know, it felt like I had to grow up or something. But yeah, those five people.
I feel like that's something that a lot of families would say, that somehow when that grandmother, who was really solid in the family, passes, it kind of disorients the family structure. A lot of people have that story, including myself.
Because he was the patriarch, she was the matriarch, and my mother is my mother's mother, my maternal grandmother, and she is the youngest of her five siblings, and the closest sibling to her was 10 years, and her oldest sibling was 16 years older than her, so it was like a generational gap between her and her siblings, so she kind of grew up as an only child. So when my grandmother passed, it was already a distance between her and her siblings, but it grew. And it didn't start to come back until she started to lose siblings. And then they were forced to come together because they realized that they were all each other had. But what inspired you when you were young?
What inspired me? I would say it'd probably be a combination of the things that my father introduced me to and being outside, nature. I definitely had a childhood where I could go and ride my bike when I came home from school, or build a clubhouse in the trees. Those things that you would see on TV, I had a pretty, I'd say, active childhood. And with my father being an engineer, I was introduced to things that some people might not see until high school or college. So seeing that at a young age, I was always curious. I always wanted to know how things worked. And I would say my father challenged me that way. We would have projects. We'd have papers to write. How does the microwave work as an elementary school student? Write a paper on that. Or go to the grocery store, add up the bill before we get to the register. So what it did was I started to learn how numbers worked, but then I started to dream and take those principles and say, you know, I can invent something. So I remember being inspired to keep a invention journal, that none of those inventions came to life yet. I've seen some of them on commercials because I didn't. I didn't actually go through with my 2-page business plan. But I would say being exposed to things and being outside always keeps me thinking creatively. How about you?
It would have to be my mother and my father. The fact that growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up, having a father was rare.
True.
My father made it his business to be there for my brother and I because he really didn't have a strong relationship with his father. And so he vowed to do the extreme opposite. And just his presence made a grand impact on our direction. And so our expectations were very much different from our friends. And at home, they always stressed making good grades. And I remember when I was growing up, we used to drive past the AUC all the time. And it was kind of in our conversation, and I was in elementary school, that I knew that when you started elementary school and you finished, your records got transferred to middle school. And then from middle school, your records got transferred to high school. So I thought that the same thing happened from high school to college as an elementary school student. So I just knew I was going to Morehouse or Morris Brown because I knew my records were going to just transfer over there. But that speaks to the fact that my parents, it didn't matter that they didn't go to college, they spoke to us as if college was a guarantee. It wasn't an option. It was always spoken of. And so after high school is college. And I don't believe that a lot of my friends were exposed to that. And so that exposure, even though they were young, even though we were from our neighborhood and certain expectations are not expected of us, they made us realize that we had the potential to do things that were, I guess you could say, out of the ordinary, but shouldn't be.
I would have to agree with that. I never thought that I wasn't going to go to college. It just seemed like that was the natural course of life. My father's, his parents, grandmother, I believe she had a third grade education, grandfather, eighth grade education. I believe all of my aunts and uncles on my father's side are high school graduates. My father, he did graduate college, but I definitely got to see that education was very paramount. That was something I would say probably was my dad's way of getting out of where he was in. Education was a tool for him to have a better life. And now me and my sister and my other siblings, we are able to be raised with just a totally different mindset than, I say, the generations before me. And that was that we could do whatever we wanted to do.
Yeah, and a lot of my first cousins, they didn't finish high school. And I'm the first male in my family to finish college. And my two older cousins, we were all the first generation. So people born from 86 to 87 are the only people who mm-hmm. graduated college in our family. And so we kind of set the standard for our second cousins and the people who came after us, so they can see that it can be done in our family. Because for a moment it was like high school was an accomplishment mm-hmm. because a lot of my cousins didn't even do that. And so it's just it feels like a lot of responsibility on my brother and I mm-hmm. to just make sure that we represent something for the rest of our family, especially as the males in our family, because I believe he and I are the only males in the first generation that have not been to prison. And so, yeah, of my grandmother's grandchildren, we are the only two males that have not been to prison.
So what type of legacy do you think that you desire to leave? Because you've already accomplished a lot. So what does legacy mean to you and what you'll leave behind?
Well, when I think about the legacy I want to leave, I think about what I want my children to see when they think about me. And I want them to think about a person who was dedicated to service, who always cared about other people and the uplift of his community. I never forget where I come from. That's why I always stress where I'm from. I never forget where I'm come from. And I want to live as close as possible to where I was raised so that I will always be connected to the community, no matter how far or how many great things I do. I want to give back to my community to show that we can produce greatness no matter what the expectations of us are. We are capable of doing whatever we set our minds to, and our environment don't limit us to where we can go. And we can change our environment by raising our awareness and raising the awareness of the people, of our neighbors and our peers. So that's the person that I want to be. I want to be that influence from my neighborhood that goes back to the neighborhood to try to make it not be the place that you don't want to go at night. I want to make it something different, to redefine where we come from. And I also have a great passion for Africa. That is my ancestry. I am an African American male, and I understand the history of how we got over here. And so I have a great connection to Africa. And so I want to build that connection, or I have a desire to have people in America, people in the Caribbean, and black people in Africa to understand that we all have the same origin and that we are connected, and that by coming together, we can be more powerful to make our influence in the world greater and to kind of handle the situations that we all go through, the oppression that we go through, to try to ease that by coming together and uniting.
Have you considered mentoring, or do you currently mentor young males?
I have been mentoring. I'm mentoring currently, and I have been mentoring for a while. It was in middle school when I first got approached to mentor other people, because for some reason, one of my fourth grade and fifth grade teacher was the same person, because my mother made him be, because he pushed us. He taught us how to write essays in the fourth grade, and so she wanted me to keep that curriculum, and that isn't taught in Georgia until the eighth grade, and so I was 4 years ahead of my classmates and who weren't in that class with me. And so when I got to eighth grade, I was writing at such a high level that they wanted me to go to the sixth and seventh graders, and even to some of the eighth graders, and tutor them on how to write. And so I was kind of in a mentor capacity then. And so throughout high school, I kind of studied a lot on what I was interested in, and it was growing into that connection with Africa that I spoke of earlier. And as I went to college, I made sure that I volunteered on any organization that was possible. And so when I went to DC, I went to Howard University outside of high school, and I was mentoring kids in the community who were at a community center somewhere in Southeast DC, which is one of the low-income neighborhoods that's challenged. And so I was mentoring a young man there. And then when I came back to Atlanta, I was mentoring young men at my church, just giving them some of the experiences that I go through. And sometimes I feel like I go through obstacles in my life to share those experiences with other people in order to either prevent them from having to go through the same thing, or if they've already been through it, to be able to relate to that person. And so I look at the bright side of my downfalls, and so I use them to my benefit and to the benefit of other people. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nicole? How do you mentor, or do you mentor?
I think that I've been mentoring for a while. Some of it, I don't think I've chosen. It kind of just happened. Maybe someone, a student, might ask me to. But I would say as far back as high school as well. I did pretty well in high school. So it was almost like I was the token black female in high school. I was in all the accelerated classes. And that brought about its own pressures in itself, I would say. Going through high school, may it be identity or what have you. But I remember even then being put in a place where academically I was there to be almost like a role model on how to get it done, how to study and so forth. When I went to college, I would say my mentoring wasn't so much academic than it was emotional and spiritual growth. So I would probably couple mentoring with discipleship. That took place, I would say, when I hit college in 2000. I enjoy it. I find, even myself, I need to be in an environment where there's people that I'm helping, there's people who are at my peer level, and there's people that are training me to mature, to grow. And I think that there's no real way to grow as a person than to be in community. No, I haven't seen it done any other way. You can read all the books in the world, but living in isolation, you're not going to grow.
Yeah, I always tell people that the bootstrap theory is a myth. There's no such thing as pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. Everyone had someone to assist mm-hmm. them at some point, whether they were able to realize it or not. Somebody helped you. So, yeah, I don't believe in that. What inspired you to go into education?
I would say I think education kind of found me when I remember back as far as third grade for me, when we used chalkboards and not dry erase boards or Promethean boards, just straight colored chalk. I remember just there was something about the teacher being in front of the classroom and getting to bring to life the subject matter. So when I was in third grade, my knowledge of education, I would say my role of education would be, I just wanted to be that person who wrote on the chalkboard. I loved writing on the chalkboard. And then I would say, as I got older and I started tutoring, there was something, I think there's a joy when someone finally gets a concept that they didn't think that they could get. Because one thing, you get the easy problems, there's not much victory in that. But when there's a problem that they are discouraged about, or they think they don't have aptitude to do it, and then they actually solve the problem. And there's that joy when, even I would say we experience that now in our jobs, where the students will say, see, I knew I was smart, almost like they thought they weren't. You know, there's this thing of when they get something that they didn't know how to do, and that's something that brings me joy. I think when I was at Penn State, I taught at Penn State and I worked at Penn State. And I was in programs where we would bring in high school students who are going to be incoming freshmen, and we would kind of do like a retention or a gap training. So we would try to assess where is their math and science level and their English level, and how does that compare to the other students that will be coming into Penn State. So what I experienced during that time is that there was a gap, and the gap was large enough for me to know that had they not had someone step in to kind of assimilate them to the Penn State culture, that they might only last one semester or two semesters. Actually, the statistic when I was at Penn State teaching there and working there in other capacities in 2008 and 2009 was that the incoming minority students into engineering, that only 50% or less of them actually remained there. May that be remained at Penn State or remained in that major. So those, it was our goal to increase those odds. And when I saw the disparities, it was something that really bothered me. Not just in the thought of these kids are the future, but I felt like, why was I blessed to be in a situation where I had all the resources in the world, but then my counterparts, people who look just like me, they didn't have the same access? So that was something that I think was always a burden for me that grew from, I would say, teaching at Penn State to now teaching high school at Reed and High. Is I feel like I'm very concerned about the children. I'm concerned about their future, and I think it's part of my role to provide the best for them. So I would say seeing the need inspired me to want to do education, and not just short term. I really believe that this is something for the rest of my life, that I'll be either involved in education or definitely an advocate for the children. How about you, Mr. Lee? Why are you in education, or why are you an educator?
That was the last word that you said, advocate. That's my word for what I do and what I see myself doing in education. I got into education. People kept telling me, you need to be a teacher. You need to be a teacher. And I did not want to hear that, because that is most definitely not what I wanted to do when I was in high school, because I saw that a lot of the teachers who were at my school seemed like they were only there for the check, and they didn't really have any passion for actually teaching people. And the ones who did teach, the ones who did care, it seems like they were either ousted or driven to the point where they were beaten down to become like the other ones by all of the policies that were being incorporated into the school system every year. It seems like things were changing and things were getting more, they were getting structured in a way that wasn't really targeted toward actual education. More of training, more of statistics and not really looking at, are the students understanding the information that they are receiving or that we expect them to receive? And so I didn't want to go near that because I didn't want to have to fight that. But the more I became, the more I read, the more I looked into who we were as a people and how we got where we are in this country, it was a fight. And so fight has been in me. And so I couldn't run away from the fight. And a lot of things inspired me. Like I was saying, a lot of the things that happened to me in my life, I wanted to share with other people. Mm. And so I wanted to give it, I wanted to give that information to people before it could happen to them so they could either use it when they approach that situation or avoid it. Like, there's this thing that people do at high school orientation and college orientation. And they say, look to the left and look to your right. Mm-hmm. And one of these people, or a lot of these people, may not be there. And that was true in high school. I remember the auditorium was filled with people. And so it had to be over 2,000 people who entered my freshman class with me. And 400 people graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always that person who made it through that crop. Like you were saying, you were the person with the resources. And so I was always on honor roll and I had all of my things together. But like I said, I was the first person in my family to go to college. And so we didn't know much about financial aid. So when I got accepted to Howard, I went up there and my financial aid was changed from the time that I left Atlanta to the time we arrived in D.C., because when I left Atlanta, I had Pell Grant. When I got to D.C., it was no longer on my records, and my parents didn't know what questions to ask or how to make sure that everything was right. I didn't know. I didn't know what was going on. And so I spent orientation at Howard. They would ask the same question, look to your left, look to your right. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to be missing. And it was me.
Hmm.
And I could not believe that I was, it still stings. And now I have 2 associate degrees and a bachelor's from Georgia State. And it still stings because that's the school that I wanted to go to. I just knew I was going to go to Howard and graduate in 4 or even 3 years and just be smooth sailing. But like I said, those downfalls, I spent 1 semester at Howard. It was the best semester that I had, but I spent 1 semester at Howard. I was that person who fell through the cracks, and it was because of financial mm-hmm. issues, because I didn't have the resources and we didn't have the knowledge. And so I started looking back at high school, and I was like, what were my guidance counselors doing? They didn't tell us anything. We didn't talk about FAFSA. They told us about FastWeb, and it was just no real,
search.
It was just no real counseling, no real, this is what college is. It's a corporation. They're about their business. If you are not on the business side of it, they don't care about you as a student. You have to leave
mm-hmm.
until you get your business straight. And so that's one of those lessons that I learned, and I had to dust myself off, get back on my feet, and use that experience to make sure that's what really inspired me to go into education. Because I said, I have to fill in that gap between the students and what they know about college, and just to make them understand that it's serious. And it's, right now, you may think people are on your back because they're just trying to bother you. But the more people are on you, that's the more they care. The more it's laissez-faire, they leave you to drop and fall on your face. You mm-hmm. may have all the freedoms that you think you want, but when those hands are gone, you don't have anyone to lean on then. Mm-hmm. You don't have anyone to ask questions, and everyone is focused on what they have to do. Everyone is going their direction, and so school didn't stop when I left. People mm-hmm. kept... The semester went on, and so that's what inspired me to go into education, to make sure that I was able to share my experiences with someone to help them, to let them know that, okay, I was out of school after my first semester, but I didn't let it stop me. First of all, I was persistent, and I made sure that I continued on with my education, and just to make sure that that knowledge is flowing. So I just am a person that loves to share knowledge with other people to make sure that history doesn't have to repeat itself.
I like, I definitely like this story, this part of the story. One, I didn't know those aspects, but I think it speaks a lot to your character, and that was you still continue to move forward. And I guess my question for you would be, for the students and parents, I would say the students that are products of the public school system, may it be in Atlanta or the surrounding counties, what would you say to them to encourage them to flourish where they're at? So maybe they didn't have a good semester at school. Maybe something we actually experienced, a student, senior, who was taking ninth grade classes. There was no way they were going to graduate. There's just, they didn't have enough credits. So dropped out, going to Job Corps in a whole nother state. So how would you encourage, I'll say that particular student, how would you encourage him to flourish where he's at, even though the plans that he had for his life might take just a little bit longer than he expected?
I would first say that we can't hold a clock up to our lives with expectations of where we're going to be at this certain time.
I agree.
And that's what I used to do. I had the biggest clock with every plan on it. And I just knew that I was going to be at this place. And I think it's good to plan ahead, but to focus on the present and just focus on the process, because throughout every downfall or every valley that I go through in my life, it's tough, it's difficult while you're going through it, but as you mature, you realize that life is not about the destination, it's about the process of getting to the destination. It's about the journey. So you have to understand, what am I supposed to gain on this journey? And then look back at the situation that you find yourself and see, okay, what did I do to contribute to where I am right now? So do some introspection. Look at what you did to put yourself where you are. What were your mistakes? What were the right things that you did? Then look at the outside influences and say, okay, what were the things that I just had no control over? Those are the things that you look at and just, you can breathe when you say that. It doesn't matter if I was on the 100% top of my game, that was an unforeseen thing that came out of the blue, and there was nothing I could do about it. So assess that, and then just look to see what, I'm still alive, I'm still breathing, so it's still a reason that I'm here. So I have to go through this with a determination and a focus and always have a reason of why you're doing things. I would encourage him to not do things for other people. It's good that when you do things, you make other people proud, such and such, but to do it for yourself first and foremost, so that you know that you're doing it for you. And so there's nothing to throw up in anyone else's face. I did this for you, such and such. No, you did it for yourself. You did it for yourself. And so you are your biggest motivator. You and the reason that you do it. And so to just continue to push, to let him know that it's not over. He's fortunate that there are alternatives available, that he is not just on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Job Corps is good for a lot of people, because I know a lot of people who went through it, and it makes you productive. It gives you something to do. And maybe, I believe the educational system is one dimensional. Everybody is not supposed to learn the same way. Everybody is not supposed to go in the same direction. And so certain people don't get those aspects in this test-driven educational system. And so when they start taking the trade classes out of school, like wood shop and mechanics and home ec and things that catered to people's interests, it kind of limited what people saw themselves or what people saw that they could do. And so I would just say, because I know the young man, he has great potential. And so I would just encourage him to continue to move and just move forward with his life and enjoy the journey and learn from it. What have you gained in your time as an educator? What have you gained as a person? What has it done for you?
I think one of the things that I learned is that sometimes kids are the best teachers. I'm finding that I thought that I was pretty proficient in math, and I've seen kids come up with different ways of solving the same problem that someone who might have come from a rote or a traditional math background where your creativity might have been stifled a bit, that might not have come about. So even though some of the methods that they might have used might have been incorrect, they just mathematically we could not solve the problem that way, for them to feel free to expand their creativity and bring that into math has been something that has really blessed me. Seeing kids come in and knowing their story and they're still going hard. Seeing kids come in, some teachers come in and knowing their story and they're still bringing joy to the students. One of the things that I've learned as well is that when you are a teacher in an urban setting, that your life is not quite as traditional as some other areas, and that it's not a 7:30 to 3:30 type of job, but it's my life. You know, I love seeing the teachers who are also coaches. Almost all the math teachers are Coach so-and-so. They don't even call them Mr. or Mrs., but seeing the teachers take an active role, being almost like a surrogate parent or being the auntie or the uncle, and just seeing the family atmosphere, I think I'm learning more of the things that I would like to do in my own family. I think it's definitely something that's only confirmed more for me, some of the things I want to do in the future. I've always wanted to adopt older children, so middle school and up. I never had a desire to adopt infants. And all it's done is I wish that I could spend more time at the school. I wish I could be more in their lives. And they inspire me. When we're after school, I laugh a lot. They... I feel like the students have become like family. Even sometimes I call them that. I'll say, well, family, this is what we're doing today. So I've definitely gained a lot more than I put in every single day.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel the same way about them. It's kind of hard to be in that environment and not become connected to the students. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how you can be human and do that. So, I mean, and that's the part of the job. You're supposed to be human. You understand that they're human beings, you are, and so that's that connection. It's supposed to be empathetic, and so the relationships are supposed to be reciprocal. You learn from them, they learn from you, and you grow together. And so I love it because I get to sit down with them when it comes to math and just read over things with them, and I'll see new ways how to work out problems, and we can just learn together. The best thing is when the teacher and the student learn together. And so that just brings people that much closer because they can understand that, all right, they can learn too. They're still, the learning process doesn't end. So long as life is going, the learning process doesn't end. And so I can see this adult learning that encourages me to not feel any type of way about not knowing information, because no one knows everything. And so when they see me learn and I see them learn and I help them learn what I just learned or something like that, it just is empowering to them, because I know it was for me when I saw teachers who could admit that they were wrong, because I had a lot of teachers who did not admit when they were wrong because they were insecure But it takes a secure person to admit when they're wrong and show people who are supposed to be subordinate to them that they can be wrong and that you can grow together.
Well, Jamal, it was a pleasure interviewing you during this time. I'm glad that I get to work with you and I have gotten to hear your story.
Same here, Ms. Shepherd. It was a pleasure.